This episode is dedicated to the memory of Frida Drew, a great lady.
Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes one episode at a time, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which ran on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is someone that you've heard across many different shows here on the Fire and Water Network, my pal Corey Drew. Hi, Corey.
Hey.
Welcome to MASHcast.
Thank you. I am very excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. Now, of course, your last appearance on the network was the bracket episode of Give Me That Star Trek. This will be a lot less controversial, I would say.
I expect so, yeah. I don't have to kill Captain Kirk in the first round, so we should be good.
Good, yeah. This is a safe space. So anyway, the episode we're here to talk about is from Season 1, Episode 6, Yankee Doodle Doctor, which originally aired on October 22nd, 1972, written by Lawrence Marks, directed by Lee Phillips. But before we talk about the episode, Corey, I have to ask you, like I ask all the new guests, like, what's your history with MASH? Because you must have been like a little kid when it went off the air in its original form, right?
Yeah. I was real little. I can remember it airing during prime time. Like, I'm old enough. I was born in 74. So I'm old enough to remember my parents watching it on television in prime time. And but real vague memories, right? And then, of course, it was available in syndication.
Yeah.
So my local NBC affiliate had it on every day at 5:30 in the afternoon. Which just so happened to be the time when I was done my post-school chores. I would come home, my mom would give me an hour from 3 to 4 to have like a snack and chill out, and she would watch Guiding Light, and I would like peek around the corner and be like, what's going on over there? Something to the day that she died, she more or less denied ever having done. But, so, and then 4 o'clock, I would go outside, I would do my chores, I would bring in the wood, I would, you know, do whatever I needed to do. And, cause you know, I lived in the country, and then I would come in, and one of the three channels we got happened to be NBC, and at 5:30 every day, MASH was on, and I would sit down and watch it with my mom before the news came on. And I just, you know, I think the humor of it really grabbed me. And then I think the discomfort of the more dramatic moments really kind of just shocked me. And I kind of felt like, oh, I need to see this every day. Who knows what's going to happen next?
That's interesting. Yeah, I've been talking about it with previous guests about how MASH surprisingly worked really well for little kids, which you wouldn't think it would. You know, visually it's pretty drab and it's got all these 50s references and 40s references, and on paper, it's not a show that you would think little kids would really take to, and yet they really seem to, because every person that I've asked about it that was alive at the time was like, oh yeah, I saw it as a little kid. You know, it's just sort of amazing. But you're the first person to talk about how unpredictable it was, and that's an interesting idea that, yeah, you never really quite know what might happen in this episode.
Right, and, you know, I you know, before the term ship existed, I really shipped Hawkeye and Hot Lips. So, like, you know, there was, like, one or two episodes where they flirted with that idea. And maybe it was because my segue into it was Guiding Light. I was, like, ready for that to happen. I was like, let's go. Let's get these two to the chapel. You know, like, I want to see them with kids and living on the coast of Maine and having a happy life. But
interesting. I like the idea of you shipping character, being an early shipper. That's right.
Oh, big time. Yeah, big time.
That's great. Well, so anyway, yeah, the episode is Yankee Doodle Doctor. Like I said, it debuted on October 22nd, 1972. An oily, fast-talking lieutenant named Bricker arrives, played by Ed Flanders, who was probably most famous playing Dr. Westfall on Seen Elsewhere, arrives looking to make a movie about the 477th. He asks Hawkeye and Trapper to contribute, but they refuse when they see it's just a glorified propaganda piece. They are particularly disgusted by Frank's turn of phrase, Yankee Doodle Doctor, to be used in the narration. Bricker suggests doing the film without Hawkeye and Trapper, but Henry says they are sort of the heart of the unit, and the film really wouldn't work without them. Despite pressure from Henry, Hawkeye and Trapper break into Henry's file cabinet and expose the film already shot, ruining it. Lieutenant Bricker is enraged and leaves the camp. Hawkeye then decides they can shoot their own film, using the camera equipment Bricker left behind, along with his cameraman. After a few days of shooting, they debut it in the mess tent in front of the whole camp and the visiting General Clayton, Herb Voland. The film is basically a Marx Brothers movie featuring Hawkeye as Groucho, Trapper as Harpo, Radar, Nurse Cutler, and the rest of the gang. It makes Henry laugh, Clayton mad. It features scenes of Hawkeye, Trapper, and Radar dropping their pants, Radar getting operated on by Groucho Pierce, and all the gang throwing a massive party. It ends, though, with a single shot of Hawkeye talking to the camera, deadly serious, denouncing the propaganda of a Yankee Doodle doctor, and how, despite all their efforts, the war kills more people than doctors can save. Clayton isn't thrilled, but admits parts of it were funny. He asks for all the goofy stuff in the movie be removed, just keep his intro and Hawkeye talking at the end. But then he quietly suggests Henry keep a print of the whole thing so they have, quote, something to laugh at when all this is over. So, Corey, like, what do you think of this episode?
I love it. It's one of my favorite. I remember watching it as a child. As a child, I was mostly drawn in by the humor, right? Earlier you mentioned all these 50 references, and it got me thinking, when I was a kid in the early 80s in rural Maine, a lot of our pop culture was still deeply infused, right, by 1950s. So I was aware of the Marx Brothers as a child because they were on Sunday morning movies on the same channel that happened to show, you know, MASH. And they would, you know, like, you know, the James Cagney riff that he does there, you know, straight out of Looney Tunes, which is something I had seen 100 times. So,
right. You Johnny Rad, you yeah. Sam. Yeah. The super cartoony version of James.
Right. Cagney. Right. And that's all stuff that, you know, at least where I was from, our entertainment options are limited. Right. When I said three channels, I wasn't joking. We had ABC, NBC, we had NBC and CBS all the time. Sometimes we got ABC and PBS. So, you know, so a lot of that stuff was just leftovers from there. So a lot of those jokes kind of spoke to me, you know, as a kid. As an adult, I was really struck by the craft that was used in creating this this episode. You know, it's something I never noticed until watching it today, is that you can hear the blades of the helicopter at the very beginning during the theme. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, wow, that's incredible. And that opening, the opening credits of the show really are like the most perfect example I've ever seen of exposition with zero dialogue, right? It is the ideal show don't tell. I mean, you know what they're about just by the end of the credits, which I thought is incredible. You know,
I've never thought about that, but you're right. It does tell you everything of what happens and the characters arrive and how they handle it.
It tells you what they're doing. It's, you know, it's like how at the beginning of, you know, I know you don't watch it, but I'm sure a lot of the listeners do. At the beginning of Arrow and every CW show where they're like, I'm the fastest man alive, you know, it's that without that. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. I love it. And there's actually moments of that sort of throughout, like those writers of that show and the creators on that show really just took that show don't tell idea to heart, and it's pretty incredible and pretty beautiful where you see it play out.
That's interesting. Yeah, I never really considered that. I like the verisimilitude of when we see the movie that Hawkeye and Trapper have shot, that it's in black and white.
Yeah, I love that.
Of course it would be, because it has right. to be. You know, they're not going to – I think Ed Westfall, I'm calling him, merging his character and the actor, Ed Flanders as a Lieutenant Bricker, that was a real shock for me when I first saw him, because I didn't see this episode. I saw this episode in reruns, but I don't think I saw it until long after I had already started watching St. Elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's this hangdog – serious guy on St. Elsewhere, and he almost always played serious people. In fact, I think they said he holds the record for playing Harry Truman the most amount of times in any different project. He was like Harry Truman in 5 different things. And yet here, as Bricker, he's this real slick-talking, sleazy Hollywood guy. And it's like completely casting against type. At least maybe back then it wasn't. But as far as I knew him, I was like, wow, Dr. Westfall is this guy. You know, he's like, hey, how you doing? And he's trying to make on a nurse. And he has this whole run about how he had an affair with, like, one of his teachers.
His high school teacher.
And he's like, I wonder if she's still alive, which is like a weird, like, this is a strange thing.
I love that moment because that moment right there just absolutely skewers the kind of Hollywood, you know, the idea of like Hollywood people. Like, even though he's in the midst of this war, he's still like Hollywood. And Radar is trying to distract him. And Radar is like, oh, how do you think I could get into movies? And he's like, well, maybe later, kid. And he's like, I got some questions for you. And he's like, maybe later, kid. And then he's like, how did you get started? And he's like, an opportunity to talk about me.
Right, yeah, right. He's actually willing to not have sex with the nurse so he could talk about himself. Yeah.
It's fantastic. And it was, I just love that moment. It's so subtle. Again, that's that show don't tell. Like, Radar is just like, tell me about yourself. And he's like, okay, I got you.
It's terrific. I like, we have the debut in this episode of Herb Voland as General Clayton, which is the third general overseeing the 4077th, as we talked about in previous episodes. These were run out of order because later on we'll see General G. Wood's character, General Hammond, return. But here, Herb Voland would last the longest as General Clayton. He would make appearances throughout the rest of the season and into the second season. In fact, he's in the very first shot in this movie. He had a lot of movie credits, but the one movie credit that is sort of worth mentioning in this context was he appeared in the Doris Day film with Six You Get Egg Roll.
Oh, yeah, he sure did.
Which also featured Jamie Farr and William Christopher playing hippies, which is great. He also appeared in episodes of Trapper John M.D., which a lot of these guys did, so he kind of had a lot of crossovers with the MASH. He died in 1981. I always thought it was a shame that none of the MASH generals in the early seasons ever came back. The later seasons, we never really saw that they disappeared. But he's funny. Like he's good here. He's kind of sleazy, but yet he seems, you know, fairly competent. At least he's not a doctor, as opposed to General Barker, which was the last general we saw. So, but I like how at the end that he admits like this was pretty funny.
Yeah,
like, he's willing to go like, okay, we can't officially release this film, but it's pretty funny. So I like that. And of course he's having an ongoing affair with Hot Lips, as they establish that she's
sleeping
with every general that comes down the line.
I just love that moment where they sit down to watch the movie and he's like, he's got his, you know, hand in hand with Hot Lips and Frank sits down next to them and he's just watching the movie completely oblivious, you know, that this is going on. Those jokes, those gags, you know, I didn't necessarily get them when I was a kid, but, you know, growing up, having, you know, rewatched it as an adult, those are the jokes that really kill me. The ones where it's not like a setup punchline kind of joke. It's those little visual gags and those moments of interpersonal humor that you don't necessarily, you know, that don't jump out at you, that really make it such a rich, like, deep show. One of the things that I loved was at the very beginning, I swear they invented a new concept, right? They invented the fifth wall, right? Because because the general comes in his Jeep and he's talking to you, right? He's talking right to the viewer. He's breaking the fourth wall Deadpool style. And then the camera pulls back and you see that there's a camera there. That's the fourth wall. You're behind the fifth wall. I'm not sure I've ever seen that before. I was like, holy cow, they invented a concept. And
I have to wonder. I got to wonder if you were watching this episode for the first time and he drives up and starts talking to the camera, you're like, wait, what's happening? Mm-hmm. Why am I, you know, like MASH doesn't talk to the camera. What's going on? I don't understand. But yeah, that is a nice reveal. It's a nice little stylistic touch.
So subtle.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's the script from Lawrence Marks or that was Lee Phillips, the director, whether he has a touch. He does have a lot of kind of subtle things. I love when They reveal Bricker finds out that his film has been exposed. We see Hawkeye and Trapper expose it to the light, and it gets ruined. And Bricker is steaming mad, and he's in Henry's office. And Henry has to call General Clayton to tell him what happened. And he says, "Well, someone ruined the film. Someone got into the film can. Someone good with their hands, like a surgeon."
Uh-huh.
And at that moment, Radar knows that Henry's about to discover what happened, and he puts his hand out to cradle the phone before Henry's ready. I love that moment where Radar's just like, "Oh, the jig is up," and he just has his hand up and waiting for. They would do that, of course, that bit of Radar being 5 seconds ahead of either both Henry and then later Colonel Potter. But I love that's a visual one, that he's ready. Just put the phone in my hand, because I know you've just discovered that Hawkeye and Trapper did this. It's interesting. Henry has a line where, we again, right from the beginning, we see that even though Hawkeye and Trapper are meant to be equals, the show is meant to be about two equal characters. Right from the beginning, it tilted towards Alan Alda because I think he was just so magnetic in the part. But part of it was they also gave him more to do. And this is another one of these episodes where Henry has a line, despite the way I wrote it in the summation, it's not really accurate. And the line that Henry has when he's talking to Bricker is because Bricker's like, "Can we do the movie without Hawkeye?" And Henry says, "Well, Pierce is really the heart of this place."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, like, way to leave Trapper out in the cold. He doesn't say they're the heart of this place. He says Hawkeye's the heart of this place. And if I was Wayne Rogers, that line would have jumped out at me like, hey, wait a minute. You know, what happened to me?
Maybe that was the beginning of the end for Wayne Rogers. You know what I mean?
Maybe, like, so.
Took him 3 more seasons to finally get the gumption up to bail. But yeah, I could see that. I don't know. You know, maybe you had a different experience with it than I did, but I genuinely viewed Trapper John and later, perhaps to a lesser extent, BJ, as, you know, his sidekick.
Interesting.
You know, I was just kind of, to me, Alan Alda was the star of the show, everybody else was there to help him shine.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, as we get on to later episodes, we go to the BJ years, I think that Hawkeye definitely was still the main character, but BJ managed to be distinct enough that they found a new way of approaching it. And they probably did that from learning from the experience of Wayne Rogers. So Wayne Rogers was sort of the test case, which is good for the show, but not great for him as an actor. Exactly. I like when we first see Hawkeye and Trapper in this episode, they're dancing together. I just love that bit, and they're play acting a little. Hawkeye has the line about, "Are you going to be in town for the whole convention?" Which is such a great...
But that scene is fantastic too, because they, you know, just before that, like, the editing of that scene is, you know, it's Henry going, "This is the best surgical team." You know, was it Henry? Maybe it wasn't. But somebody's saying that this is the best surgical team. You know, these are the real deal. These are real soldiers. And then it cuts to Hawkeye and Trapper dancing with each other, you know, which I thought was kind of fun. That was a nice little joke, you know, just to kind of point out that, you know, real soldiers are not necessarily what you think they might be.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That is, it's a great gag. And it's just, you know, it's a little transgressive. You know, I mean, it's not to take it too terribly seriously, but nevertheless, it's two straight actors dancing with one another and using dialogue that you would have of a guy at a convention trying to sweet talk a woman. I mean, you're down for the whole convention. That's a line that a guy would talk to a girl that he met at a bar or a prostitute or something like that. So it's, you know, it's just a little bit of a thing, which I enjoy quite a bit. This episode also features a shot of Hawkeye and Trapper with martinis in their hand, saluting the sort of not facing the camera, but almost. And that is a GIF. That is a big GIF. If you plug in MASH GIF in Google, this is one of the most famous GIFs of those two just saluting with the martini. I mean, I actually like Hawkeye's movie. I think it's pretty funny. I like the whole idea that Alan Alda, who has been sort of doing his jokes in a very Groucho Marx patois, to this point, he finally gets to full-on do it. I mean, just put the grease paint on. And there's moments in the movie where I feel like it's ad-libbed. Like, there's just little bits and pieces where when Radar is the patient and he's in the OR and Margie Cutler comes in and she says Marcia Strassman. She comes in and she pinches Radar's Mrs. Cotter. She pinches Radar's cheek and she's like, "Hey everybody, the Yankee Ducal Doctor's coming." And then she kind of says, almost like half whispers, "Lucky." And she just says it in a way that almost feels like it was an ad lib. And then there's another scene where Trapper is playing Harpo. Or no, he's playing Harpo because he's silent, he's mute.
Right. Yeah.
And he asks Groucho asks him for a scalpel, and Trapper is like unfastening his belt, taking over his coat, and he's just pulling things out of his pants. Mm-hmm. And you hear Hawkeye say, "Don't get undressed. It's gonna be a scalpel," which again feels ad libby the way they kind of have the shruggy delivery. And then I don't know if you noticed this because I know you just watched the episode before we recorded. But when he pulls out the saw, right? He pulls out a giant saw, and he flips it upside down.
Yeah.
So the sharp edge is not touching Gary Berghoff's stomach. But he starts sawing back and forth, and you see Gary Berghoff
twitch.
And I almost wonder if it hurt anyway, because it is still kind of a sharp edge.
It's so great. The twitching was fantastic. Like he was severing his spinal column. Yeah. it's such a good joke.
Yeah, it's a great bit. I mean, like all of it. I mean, like we see Margie dance on stage before Hawkeye comes. She's a good dancer. She really knows how to move. Marcia Strassman was quite a good dancer. I thought that was impressive. And then, of course, it ends with this great scene of Hawkeye talking directly to the camera, and he has a line where, and I'll jump right to it because it's my favorite line in the episode, where he says, "This isn't a very satisfying ending for a movie." But then no war is a movie. And I think that's a very meta line, because this was Alan Alda's contention that the show was supposed to be as realistic as possible in presenting what war was really like, that it's not fun, it's not amusing, it's not, as he says, no saints in surgical garb. And so it feels like that's Alan Alda talking to the audience via Hawkeye talking to his audience. And I thought that's and I like the way it ends, that it just watches him walk away and talk to a nurse. It's a great ending in the fictional world of MASH for this movie, but it also was a great ending for this episode. You know, the way it works on both levels, I would say.
I agree. Yeah, I think that the that whole scene, when I talked about, you know, earlier about the moments of like uncertainty and surprise, and just sort of being like blown away. This was one of those episodes for me. That's why I remember it, you know, so well, is that it went from just silly shenanigans to, you know, a guy who's really passionate and plays that off by pretending he doesn't care, or maybe not even pretending. Maybe he doesn't care about the things that other people value, right? Mm-hmm. Like authority. You know, that moment when Henry Blake walks in and they go, "Hiya, Henry. Hiya, Henry." And they sit down with their martinis, and Henry goes, "Eddie's men." Like, after they have sat down with their alcohol. Like, you know, when you take that and you sort of contrast it to that black and white, you know, I don't know, that like black and white monologue, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, for as a kid, for me, that was so abrupt and it just really stuck with me for my whole life. And really, probably a very big piece of forming my own political thought. Mm-hmm. You know, because it is, you know, pretty much a knee-jerk response in me that war is bad. You know, I need people to convince me otherwise.
Right.
Right? If there's any kind of military, anything being discussed, any sort of military solution being discussed, I need you to convince me why it's not a bad idea. I don't go I don't go into it thinking, okay, this is good. What could go wrong?
Yeah, everything. Everything could go wrong. Yeah. I mean, when Frank does his whole sanctimonious narration, I mean, you're totally on board with Hawkeye and Trapper laughing. And I love when they start mocking it, and then they both break into the song simultaneously, and they just stuck a feather in his cap and called her Macaro. Like, they just could not hate it more. And then Frankie was like, he's like, you don't like it. And they're like, we hate it. Let me count the weight. Like, they utterly mock him at every show. Because you can just know that it's like, Frank's just full of shit. You know? I mean, he just is. He says all the doctors are all volunteers. I mean, it's all just propaganda. And it's sort of funny when you think about that. You know, a lot of people who I shouldn't say a lot of people. I don't want to speak for them. But I've done enough reading about the Korean War to know that there are people that served in that war that call this the Forgotten War.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Korean War came just 5 years after World War II, which is staggering to think about. That we were already involved in another war just half a decade after the massive conflagration that was World War II. And, you know, it needed its own propaganda, but you don't see a lot of propaganda. You know, everybody's familiar with World War II propaganda. You know, the posters and when you ride alone, you ride with Hitler and all that kind of stuff. But there wasn't a lot of that for the Korean War because it was a very different conflict. I mean, in fact, the government refused to even call it a war. They called it a police action, which is absurd.
Right.
And that's something that MASH talked about. So, yeah, I've mentioned this in previous episodes and then you just brought it up there about it, that this show was very informative for me as a child of explaining to me that, yeah, if you're going to go to war – it absolutely has to be the last possible solution. Mm-hmm. We have to exhaust every other version because this is what happens. And, yeah, I mean, Hawkeye, again, Alan Alda just talking directly to the camera. And it's, you know, showing a confidence in the actor and in the role that he could end the episode the way he does, just staring right at the camera and telling people, you know, our skills are not enough and people are going to die. And that's just it. That's just the way it is. And that's the end of this movie. And as he says, no war is a movie. It's just, it's really terrific. And it's, I mean, look, there've been, we're already only six episodes in and there have already been a couple of really good ones, but this one is the first one where it's really planting its flag with saying, we are going to do some serious stuff occasionally that you probably not necessarily expecting.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, what's kind of funny is maybe not funny, maybe ironic, is that in playing this guy who, you know, thumbs his nose to authority, like, you know, earlier in the episode, you know, Henry's trying to flex his muscle, theoretically, again, and he's like, you know, you're kind of supposed to do what I tell you, and he sort of flashes his star, right? His colonel emblem. And he goes, what, because of your jewelry?
Yeah.
You know? But then, like, ironically, that character sits down and, at least for me, kind of became an authority figure, somebody that I trust, right? Like, not even just the character, but Alan Alda. Like, years later when he would do, like, was a Scientific American, you know, like he would say something to me and I would be like, yes, I agree. I believe you, you know,
oh,
like,
sure. Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of ironic to me that by playing, you know, the least likely person who would want to be an authority figure, right. He became one to me, you know, you know,
absolutely. Oh, when he plays the senator who runs for president on West Wing, he's playing a Republican in that, and he espouses certain Republican talking points. And even though the show is clearly on the side of Jimmy Smits's character, who is obviously the Obama stand-in, I was like, yeah, I'd be on board with this because it's Alan Alda. It's Alan Alda playing this character, you know? I'm like, I'm ready for the West Wing spinoff show where he plays the president. I'm totally on board with that, absolutely.
What was the name of the film, for whatever reason, I can never remember it, that he was in with Ben Stiller, where Ben Stiller goes on a quest to find his adoptive parents.
Flirting
with Disaster.
Yeah,
thank
he's
you.
Married to Lily Tomlin in that movie,
yeah.
Which is like, imagine, I can't imagine those conversations. That,
oh, right?
The two people that got famous around the same time but on completely parallel tracks.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when Alan Alda shows up in movies, even if he's in it for 5 minutes. He was in Bridge of Spies for 5 minutes, and I'm just like, oh, I'm just happy to see Alan Alda just show up in a movie.
And the doctor's commercials on TV now.
Yes, that's right, for the insurance. They have all the TV doctors, and there he is.
Yep.
This is so exciting.
Yep.
He's been very – I don't mean to get off track a little, but now that you've brought it up, he's been very keen to Okay, I don't want to say distance himself from MASH. He clearly does not distance himself from MASH because he's proud of it. But he also likes to say, and I've seen him say on his Twitter feed, I love that he's like 85 and he has a Twitter feed, that he has said that he likes to look forward, not back. So I think that's probably why, maybe his indication of, that's why he doesn't do like endless MASH reunions or what, not reunions, but you know what I mean. Like he's always talking about his newest project as opposed to going back and back and back talking about his older stuff. But I can't help it. When I see him in certain things, I'm like, I always just, you know, I transpose. And he did a guest run on ER back when that, when that show was on, where he was on for, I think, like 4 or 5 episodes. And he played a doctor. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But there was a line in an episode where he talks about that he was, that his character is a veteran. And I just went, he's Hawkeye Pierce. It's not technically Hawkeye Pierce, but it's pretty darn close because he's a doctor who was a veteran of a war. I'm like, you don't put that line in Alan Alda's mouth unless you are channeling him as Hawkeye Pierce.
Right.
You just don't. So
that's an homage for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, I mean, it's I love following him and things. There's a couple other bits of trivia that I wanted to mention before we wrap up in this episode. First of all, we see a soldier reading an issue of Sports Illustrated, which did not start until 1954.
Yeah.
So like a lot of the comic books, Radar would read the newsstand distribution to the 477, but it was really good. Frank asks if Lieutenant Bricker is a surgeon, which he should know he isn't, because all surgeons were commissioned as captains. So if Bricker is a lieutenant, he, by definition, cannot be a surgeon. Come on, Frank, get with the program.
I did not know that.
I have to wonder, we see there's a scene of Henry and Radar with a chart. Where'd they get that chart? Was there a Kinko's somewhere in Wee Shampoo? I don't know where they got that chart card so fast. And we see the guy that helps Bricker, who is like he's running the camera, this sergeant. I don't think he's ever given a name. I think he's – oh, Sergeant Martin, actually. He's played by an actor named Bert Kramer. And Bert Kramer, the one credit that jumped out at me for people who know how much I hate this character – hate these characters, he played Computron on Transformers. So there you go. He had a very wide career. Lee Phillips directed 2 episodes of MASH, this one and one other one. He was also worked as an actor. And, of course, Lawrence Marks did a lot of episodes of the first couple of years of the show. So this is a really, really fine show. It's kind of form-busting, as you mentioned. It creates the whole notion of the fifth wall. I think it's probably – Chief Surgeon Who is probably my favorite of the ones we've gone through so far. But I'd say this is probably the best one in terms of its juggling the serious content with the wacky content. And it goes way out wacky. And then you get Alan Alda getting to do Groucho Marx, which I'm sure he enjoyed.
I'm sure.
So, yeah, it's a really terrific episode.
Yeah, the spectrum there from, you know, goofy to – like deadly serious is really wide. Like there's a lot in between.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a particular favorite line from this episode?
So when Frank is reading the script and he talks about how that they're all volunteers, like you mentioned earlier, that jumped out at me because I thought, wow, that's a really good illustration of the conflict inside, you know, Hawkeye, because he then follows it up by saying he was trying to puncture his eardrum with an ice pick. So like he's a volunteer, right? But he has to be there because the government forced him to be there. Right. But then also he is truly a volunteer because if he wasn't there, he knows people who shouldn't die would. Right. So he's that's a really cool conflict that they illustrate with that. And I liked that moment. Like I liked that moment a lot just because they shot right over to Hawkeye and Trapper when he read that line. But my favorite bit of dialogue was when the director says, "I never compromise. I go right to surrender." I love that.
Yeah, Bricker departs the episode halfway through. It's another kind of nice story change, is that he's the guest star and he really dominates the first half of the show, and you think he's going to be in it through the whole thing. No, he departs, and then he's gone for the rest of the rest
like
of the
peace episode. Him out.
Yeah,
I can't work in these conditions.
Yeah, I can't work. I came under these conditions. Oh, and that is another great line of where Hawkeye does his awful James Cagney impression. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that was pretty good, wasn't it? And Trapper gets the best Carmen Miranda I've ever seen.
I love that. Yeah. So fantastic.
That's one of those ones where I'm a kid. I'm like, who's Carmen Miranda? I got to go look it up. And then, of course, as you mentioned, it's like another reference from a Bugs Bunny cartoon. Because, of course, Bugs Bunny did Carmen Miranda. You know, I mean, it's a lot of this stuff is all sort of all mixed together. So, yeah, Yankee Doodle Doctor. It's a real terrific episode.
Yeah, it sure is. The other line that I really liked, I'm sorry, I don't mean to digress, but
no. The
other line I really liked was when he asked him if he was a surgeon, and Hawkeye says, I hope so, we don't need a gynecologist. That killed me.
I always feel like, I know that the CBS did not like any references to women's, like, anatomy or anything, so mm-hmm. I always feel like that was Larry Gelbart just getting the word in there, just to kind of pinch at them a little, just mm-hmm. by the sheer mentioning of a gynecologist, probably made some CBS censor sweat a little.
Right.
Just like, you know, there's a bit I read in a book where somebody, they wanted to work the word virgin into the episode, and they were like, you can't say that. You cannot say the word virgin. That's it. And so later on, they introduced a soldier from the Virgin Islands. And it was just Larry Gelbart just tweaking the guy a little bit. I'm sure some censor was just like, do you have to mention gynecology? Hang on, all right. Technically, we can't say you can't say that. So, okay.
Right.
So anyway, all right. Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Corey, for stopping by. I'm always happy to talk to you. We've been on several of my shows, and you've been on several of Siskoid's episodes of Star Trek. So do you have anything else coming up on the Fire and Water pipeline? I feel like you're always involved in something one of us is doing.
Nothing's jumping out at me right now. I've got, as Siskoid always berates me for saying, I have some irons in the fire. I'm just not particularly quick at building fires. So, you know, I'm trying to be thoughtful and take my time and make sure I get all my ducks in a row. But there will be more of these dulcet tones heard over the interwebs.
Outstanding. I always enjoy having you here on the network. And so,
thanks. It's always a blast.
Yeah, very cool. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening. As I will end every episode as I do, I have to say, please, Disney, Fox, whoever owns MASH, please get this thing on streaming. It was very funny because Corey, you assumed, Corey, that MASH was still on Netflix because the last time you checked it was. And then you're like, oh, crap, it's not there anymore. So there's no reason why it's not available. Get it on, as I've said, even though I own all the DVDs, I would buy it on iTunes again. If they put it up on iTunes mm-hmm. and you could buy the whole series, all 251 episodes for, you know, $99.99 or whatever the hell they want to charge, I'd buy it because I just mm-hmm. would love the ease of being able to plug it in at any moment and rewatch it. So please, come on, Disney, Fox, get it on streaming. I'm going to keep asking every episode until we get it, and then I said even a couple episodes probably past that. So so again, Corey, thank you so much for stopping by, man. I always enjoy talking to you.
Thanks.
All right, thanks everybody for listening. You can go to Twitter, where we're talking about MASH, at MASH477cast, and you can find back episodes of the show on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. So until the next episode, that is all.
Red-blooded American knows if he is wounded, he will be in the strong, capable hands of a Yankee Doodle doctor.
A Yankee Doodle doctor
stuck a feather in his nurse and called her macaroni.